that awesome, man? I love that song. That's phenomenal. Yeah, let's give them another hand. It's phenomenal. We kicked off this series last week called Three for Me. And the thought behind it is making better decisions. And I know that sounds kind of generic, but with this series, what we're trying to do is really make it personal. Like, this is not something you can pawn off. Because just like you have problems that hit you that are unique, normally you didn't plan on, you didn't want to be in those situations, you didn't want to face that loss, you didn't know what to do with this gain that's coming down the track, and you're confused, and what do I do? You know, you look at your past, maybe you've made some tough decisions that didn't go like you wanted them to. We've all been there. So we're looking at three for me. These are three questions that even the answers you don't have to share outside yourself in the beginning. And I give you that permission because I know so many times with church, it seems we got to make this big decision and then everybody has to know about it and that kind of thing. But with these are intensely personal for a reason. And we're given three questions that you have to internally wrestle with. And they're nothing that you can delegate. You can't delegate it to your spouse. You can't delegate it to parents. It's something you'd have to deal with. And last week we started with, am I being completely honest with myself? Listen to the podcast. It's the toughest question of the series, probably the most important question of the series because it kind of affects every area of your life. So today we're going to look at a question. And I want you to track with me before we do. Most of the things in your life, most of the seasons, the big events, the big moments, at some point in your life become a story. At some point, I'm talking about the worst tragedies, the highest highs, the lowest lows, the greatest promotion, the greatest job opportunity. At some point in your journey, they become a story. We all have them. I mean, you talk about to somebody that went to high school and, you know, they'll take 4 years of high school. For me, it's easy. I started it. I hated it. I graduated. That was high school for me, you know. That was school. College, kind of the same way. But we condense every struggle, every good season, every bad season. Eventually in our life, it becomes a story. Divorce, loss of someone you love, the birth of a child, it becomes part of it becomes a story. I mean, that you tell people just in a few sentences. It becomes part of your life. And during that time, it seems like the end or the beginning. It seems overwhelming maybe. But at some point in your journey, it becomes a story. Life Point Church to me now is a story. We wrestled with moving to Louisville, and this group of people were wrestling with what to do. And we came together and we spent 10 months behind the scenes preparing to launch a church. And we moved, we launched and we met on a Wednesday night for 10 months in what we called the dentist office, this building with a real low ceiling. It was awful. And then we launched in a movie theater. We were there for 3 years and we've been here for 3 years. And you know, I'm still telling bad jokes that most people don't get, but we're still having fun. But this journey for some of us, it's much more entailed than that, much more detailed, but it's still a story. With my wife, I dated my wife 4.5 years, and two of those, she was at college, and now after 14 years of marriage, we just tell a story. Now to her, it seems like 25 years, but it's only been 14, really. It's part of our story. Everything in life is a story. At some point, I know that your heart is broken, maybe. I know that you're the most excited that you've ever been. Some of you are in just an amazing season. But at some point, this season, this stage, this trial, this win, this loss is going to be a story. Why is this important? Jay, we all know that. What's the big deal? Here's the cool part. You get to choose beginning today how the story will end. You get to choose today how the story will be told. See, we look back at our lives and we see parts of the story that we don't like. We see parts of the story that we love. But here's the cool thing. With what we're going to look at today, you can rewrite history. And I know you're pretty sharp and you figured out probably the question, but let me give it to you just for redundancy. What story do I want to tell? When this season, when this moment, when this thing becomes part of the story, like right now it's in the future, what story do I want to tell? Do I want to tell a story that makes me feel ashamed? Do I want to tell a story that I have to lie about? Do I have to tell a story that I have to leave gaps in because I'm embarrassed? What kind of story do I want to tell? We're struggling because it's the future, but one day the future will be the story that you're telling. And will you say that I quit? Will you say I won? Will you say I ran? Will you say I wouldn't face reality? Or will you decide this story, I want to tell with a different ending? Maybe this is the first time in your life a story is going to end well, that there's going to be a silver lining to it. And it's up to you. The choice will be yours. What story do I want to tell? Today, God can help you rewrite history for you and your family. And some of you have already begun to do that. You're single, but you've stopped running and you've stopped doing things the way you used to. You just said, I want to tell a different story. And you got God's grace involved in your relational life because it used to be cash, you know, do they have a job and cuteness and then hook up, you know, what it's like sexually. But now that you have Christ in your life, you're looking as a single person saying, do they love Jesus? Can I bond with them emotionally? Do they need counseling? Do I need counseling? Of course, cuteness is a part of it. Am I attracted to that person? And I'm going to hold up until we get hitched up. And maybe you've never done that before. I'm going to guard my sexuality until you put a ring on the finger. And it's something you've never even considered, but you've become a Christ follower. And you're like, you know, I've always done this. And the story always is the same. I date for a while, and I find out I don't like them, and they don't like me. And we end up splitting up, and then I end up lonely, and I go through the cycle again. You can rewrite history today. Some of you have already done this. You're married. You used to avoid and blame and fight, pout, passive-aggressively, yell at one another. And then one day you just said, you know, let's write a different story. And you faced up. Maybe it was last week. You got honest with yourself. And you looked up. You said, God, we can't do this without you. Put God at the center of your marriage. You begin to dial up. You begin to ask for help. Then to get counseling, read a book, whatever the case may be. You begin to dial in. You came to a place like LifePoint. You begin to connect with other Christians. You get in a life group. You begin to serve. And now, your marriage, you're talking like you never have before. There's an intimacy physically, spiritually, and emotionally that you've never known for both partners, for both people. And it's amazing. And you're writing a new story, and your kids are over in Kaleidoscope or in the youth ministry. Their story's being written too. Now, you can choose a story with gaps and hurts. We all have. But here's the reality. It's not near as fulfilling as a life of meaning and redemption. It's not near as fulfilling. Now, listen, you could continue writing stories and avoiding. And the sad part is when you meet people that constantly have gaps and they can't face reality and they have to lie and then they lie upon another lie and they're trying to tell this because they're trying to save face, it's exhausting. And the worst part is when you pillow your head at night and you're just hanging out, you're watching TV alone, you know you're carrying this burden that is not fulfilling. But today, everything can change. You can choose a life of meaning and redemption just like it's like the band was singing about. You can be thankful for every part of your story. You could tell every part of your story, even the bad parts, even the parts that used to hide from, but you're telling a different story because you've let God come into the picture. And here's what I want you to know as we look at this. You can't defer this. Wives, I don't care if you're a stay-at-home mom. I don't care if you're an executive or a CEO at Yums. You can't defer this. You can't, even if you go to counseling or have a mentor, you can't defer this to your mentor. Husbands, you can't pawn this on your wife. I'm really busy. I'm building the business. I'm building my career. She takes care of spiritual things and the kids. You can't defer this. So here's the question. What story do you want to tell? We're going to look at a dude that is awesome at representing this. Now, when we talk about the Bible, man, because most people, even most Christians, don't read the Bible, okay? They just don't. Or they don't ingest the Bible. Today, you don't even have to read or know how to read. You can listen on MP3. You can go to the Christian bookstore or probably Walmart and get the Bible on CD or whatever, maybe DVD, read by some cool-voiced person. So there's really no excuse to only let this be your Bible time or something your wife shares from you with her from her devotions or your husband shares with you. But I know that most people don't ingest the Bible. I know it's a struggle. I'm not judging you, I just know that. And so kind of the way we view the Bible is through characters, which is okay. It's like major characters, and it's kind of like a kid's Bible. You know what I mean? And when you open a kid's Bible, everybody's smiling, like in every story. Jonah is on the side of it. Now, Jonah's running from God, but in the children's Bible, he's smiling like, this is nice. And he gets thrown in the sea, and a big happy fish just eats him in one gulp. And he spends three happy days in there, and you can see, like, he's smiling in the whale, and the whale's smiling, and or whatever, the fish. We don't know if it was a whale. Bible just says a great fish. And then it vomits him up, and it doesn't look like what would happen if he spent 3 days in the belly of something where the acid was eating his skin off and had manged his hair and had bleached his skin and dumps him on the shore. It's the happy children's Bible, you know? We don't want to scare little kids. So they spit him out, and he's like, looks like he just come off this, you know, from getting his hair cut and getting some new robes or whatever. And he goes, and it's not going to preach to people he hates. It's just some Ninevites, man. He hates these people. He wanted them to die and go to hell. He didn't want to talk to them. Yeah, we kind of have that mentality, that 30 minute and done kind of sitcom view of the Bible. And there's no wonder the Bible doesn't seem, you know, real to us, and we have that. But this dude, the Bible takes a lot of time with. Everybody's not happy. It's not paradise, man. We're looking at Joseph. Now let me catch you up to speed on him. The time is about 1850 BC. Jonah's dad is Jacob, who is Israel, who the country's named after. I mean, he's rich. This kid's know nothing but being doted on. He's his dad's favorite kid. He has 12 brothers. His dad bought him the special coat to let everybody know that he's the brother that he favors. Now that's kind of a bad situation, right, for him. I mean, you already get his screwed up family dynamic out of the gate. And his brothers begin to kind of scheme and, you know, like, we hate this guy. He always has dreams, and in the dream, he's always the hero, and we're always kissing his butt and, you know, bowing at his feet. And we're, you know, this is just, we got to get rid of this guy. If we're going to have any kind of life and get any kind of inheritance from our dad, he's going to get it all. And so they hatch a plan, and they're like, should we kill him or sell him into slavery? So while they're deliberating, he comes out to see them. Hey, brothers, what's up, guys? Yeah, come here. They throw him in a well, a dried up well, and they're like, yeah, they're debating, you know, should we kill him? It'd be a lot easier to kill him, man, put some blood on the, and just get, you know, forget about this, and say a tiger got him or something, and one brother's like, nah, man, let's just sell him into slavery. Hey, you know, let's do part two. Let's drag out the torture for years. So that's what they do. And finally, he ends up under a guy's care as a slave named Potiphar. And that's where we pick up the story. I want you to look at this with me in Genesis 39. Genesis 39:1. When Joseph was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar, an Egyptian officer. Potiphar was captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. I mean, this guy was militarily a stud. He had a lot of pull. He had a lot of power. He was great in his nation. But here's the cool part. The Lord was with Joseph. So he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. God was with him, and he applied himself. He used his gifts, and it just blew up for him. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. That's not his secretary. This is the guy in charge. Potiphar didn't even pick his food. Joseph was about, you know, did everything. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. From the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household for Joseph's sake. All his household affairs ran smoothly and his crops and livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. You know, hey, what are we having for dinner tonight? That was it. It'd be awesome to have somebody run your life like that, especially if you're administratively handicapped like me. That'd be like a dream come true. Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man, and Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Come and sleep with me, she demanded. Now, she wasn't cold and wanting to have a sleepover, okay? You get what's going on here. But Joseph refused. Look, he told her, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. Nobody has more authority than me. He has held back nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God, not just against, this is where this guy's operating from. But Joseph refused. She kept pressing on Joseph day after day, but he refused to sleep with her. And he kept out of her way as much as possible. One day, however, no one was around when he went in to do his work. She came and grabbed him by his cloak, demanding, come on, sleep with me. Joseph tore himself away. The best way to get away from temptation is not praying and quoting scripture. It is to run. But he left his cloak. His coat was in her hand as he ran from the house. When she saw that she was holding his cloak and he had fled, she called out to her servants. Soon all the men came running. Look, she said, my husband's brought us this Hebrew slave here to make fools of us. He came into my room to rape me, but I screamed. I mean, Joseph has got a lose-lose situation here. There's two scriptures in Proverbs, and the translation when you put them together is danged if you do, danged if you don't. How many people have ever been in that situation? Yeah, we've been there. Here is where he's at. It's one of those things where he can't lose. I mean, come on, up until this part in the story, if we're looking at this honestly and not like through the happy biblical kids Bible, we would say, what in the world is he still serving God for? I mean, what has faith in God got you, man? Your brothers almost killed you, sold you into slavery, didn't care what kind of slavery, and you still trust God. And we get, okay, after the first time, and now you've risen to power in this household, but man, Joseph, you've got to be lonely. You've got no family. You are young. You are filled with testosterone. Nobody's going to know. What is up with this guy? I mean, he's been sold out, but Joseph's asking what we ask. What story do I want to tell? Do I want to tell the story that people can trust me? Do I want to tell the story that God rescued me and promoted me? Or I got it on with the boss's old lady. And I use lady loosely here. Pause for joke to get the last statement. Pause, okay, you got the pun. Right? Joseph wants God involved. Joseph wants his story to reveal something other than just a guy that got sold into slavery and had sex with his boss's wife when no one was looking. I got to be honest with you. In his situation, in his emotional distress, in his hurt, and you're going to see that he was carrying some mega hurt around, this kind of faith, I got to be honest with you, amazes me personally. What do I do relationally? What do I want my story to be? Joseph's just sitting there, this young guy. God's delivered me. If I ever have a family, if I ever have kids, what's going to be my story relationally I could do this and then come back and it would just be like, I had this really cool, awesome relational life but I had sex with my boss's wife and I could say, hey, I had an awesome life and I was lonely, gap, don't say anything or lie when my kids ask me and go on. And he had to be deliberating this. If you've ever been in a lose-lose situation, you know. And you don't think about necessarily what's going to happen soon. You just feel the pressure of the moment. I found myself in this kind of situation after I'd met Crystal. And since I have been with my wife, I've not dated, I've not called, I've not flirted with, I've not made out with no one since the day that we started dating. But I gotta be honest, she's the first person in my life that I've had that kind of faithfulness to. And I think part of it was I said, what kind of story do I wanna tell in 1994? And I went to counseling. And I began to work through my hurts and work through the things that drove me to my fixes and the things that I did to fight loneliness. I got counseling and I said, what kind of story do I wanna write? And I thought, by doing that and by being faithful to her, that would be enough. I really did. I'm in my naivete. Well, thanks for that. That was cool. But I'm in Florida, and I'm speaking for my buddy at a singles slash college and career gathering. And really, it was just an excuse to go down and hang out with my best friend, Brad. In the church that he was a part of, he was an executive pastor, they had like this hotel room in the church. Right? No big deal. It's like, and I'm in Panama City. I forgot to tell you that. I'm in Panama City, so that's really cool. 20 minutes from the beach. I've got free hotel. I'm like 25 at the time, 26 maybe. I speak. People are like, hey, let's go to the beach, hang out. Went to the beach, hang out. Well, two people came back. They wanted to see what they called it, the prophet's chamber, which is hilarious. But anyways, it was this dated 70s looking hotel room in the church. So we come back, and there's a guy named Jason, and we'll call the girl Lisa, in case she ever listened to a podcast. And Jason liked Lisa, and he told me that when we were on. He rode with me back to the church. Or no, he told me, we all drove separate. He told me, he's like, hey, man, I'm going to ask her out. I was like, dude, that's awesome, you know. Jason, Brad was raising up, and Jason eventually became Brad's assistant pastor, and he was just this curly-headed college kid, and it was, you know, he was a great kid. So we go back to this place, and I've been committed to Crystal. I've been committed to Christ. Surrendered that part of my life a long time ago, years before this moment. And Jason's like, man, it's getting late. I got to go. And Lisa didn't say anything. And I said, Jason, can you stay a little longer? This is really awkward for me. And I'm a young guy. I would do things different now. Like, as far as even on the front end, I just was young, and I was like, it was real awkward for me. It's kind of like Joseph. There's nobody around. What do? I just run, you know, kind of one of those moments. Well, she was kind of like Potiphar's wife. She sat down on the bed, and she wasn't quoting scripture when she did. She wasn't saying, hey, come and pray with me. She said, hey, come and lay with me. And I was at one of those crossroads. How do I want my story to go? In my soul, and you know how God speaks to you, and like you say that and people don't understand, but in my spirit I knew that if I did this, the Lord just clearly spoke to me that I would lose any opportunity I had with Crystal, because she had much more self-respect and much more character than to put up with something like that. And I sat down on the couch, and I didn't know what to do, and I said, tell me about your life. And all at once I saw my pastor, my counselor, my mentor still. You've heard me talk about him, David Schooler. He just flashed in my mind. His big head was like right there in front of me. And I said, tell me about you, because that's what he always says. And she's like, guys have always used me. Guys have always used me for my body. And I'm like, man, there's some pieces you're not putting together here. There might be a reason for that. You know what I mean? I'm kind of laughing to myself. And I listen. And I listen, and finally she stops crying, and I said, well, I said, it's getting late. I need to get to bed, and I've got an early day tomorrow. And she left. First time in my life I'd ever had that victory. I was shaking afterwards. I could just feel the spiritual pressure in my life. And just, this was just one of those moments. And it didn't hit me until the next morning that my story was different now. My story relationally had always been unfaithful, unpredictable, unhealthy. But today, that night, I said, what story do I want to tell? And it was to her. I didn't want to tell her the wrong story. And God, by his grace, we got through that. and wrote a different story for my life. I really believe if I would have done what, if I'd have wrote the same old story, I really don't believe I'd be in the ministry today. I believe that was the defining moment of my life. I still believe it after all these years. Joseph is facing loss after loss, but he keeps choosing biblical principles. He's accused. Now, I would quit here after the accusation, I think, but he didn't. He's thrown in prison as a rapist. You've seen lockup. Am I going to be somebody's girlfriend? Am I going to have to fight every day? Am I going to have to join some gang or whatever the case may be? Should I at this point curse God? I'm innocent, God. He said, nope, that's not going to be my story. I'm going to continue to trust you. I am not digging this. I am not understanding this. But I want a story that I can tell all the way through. And all at once, he's in charge of the prison after a certain matter of months. And these two guys come, the butler and the baker. There was no candlestick maker. It was a butler and a baker. They have these visions. And Joseph said, tell me your visions. God gives the interpretation of visions. So they tell him. He interprets them exactly like they took place. And he just said, hey, because one guy died, the baker died, the butler lived. He said, hey, man, just remember me. Tell somebody. Remember, I'm innocent. Tell somebody how God used me in your life. But he forgot. And then Pharaoh has a dream. Pharaoh has this dream. Can't sleep at night. He asked all his court, all the spiritual shaman. He said, hey, do you guys know how to interpret dreams? He said, no. And all at once, the butler, he's standing there. He's like, oh, my gosh, I forgot. Pharaoh, I know a guy that knows God. Bring him in. So they clean him up. He's a prisoner accused of rape, a slave, dysfunctional family that his family hates him other than his dad and his little brother. And here he stands before the most powerful man in the world at that time, Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Pharaoh says, I had this dream, and I had this dream about fat cows and skinny cows, and the skinny cows ate the fat cows. He goes on to tell him another dream, and it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the same theme. And he said, listen, these two dreams are one. And he said, here's what's going to happen. There's going to be 7 years of abundant reaping and sowing in Egypt. And then there's going to be 7 years of complete destitute famine like you've never seen in history. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, and here's the slave saying, you need to get someone to administrate this and lay up, you know, and save and barter and all this kind of stuff. And then Egypt will be the place everybody comes to get food. And he looks around, he's like, wow. Hey, is anybody going to disagree with me? Because if you do, I'll kill you. I think this Hebrew slave that's accused of rape should be my prime minister for the next 14 years. Anybody have a problem with that? Of course, nobody said no. So boom, suddenly a guy accused of rape, a guy whose family hated him, a guy who was a slave becomes the number two dude in the world. It is an amazing, amazing, amazing story. And it'd be awesome to end right there. The story doesn't end in Genesis. I mean, can you imagine that? Just let that sink in. He gets married. He has two sons. Slave accused of rape. Now he's the most powerful guy in the world next to Pharaoh. The famine hit. All of it hits just like God revealed. And one day, here comes these 11 guys. Nobody else knows these 11 guys, but old Joseph does. It's his brothers. Wow. They've been living a lie for 11 years. They said an animal killed him, broke his dad's heart. They've been living with a lie. It's been eating their insides out. You see that from their reaction later, but here's his chance to destroy them. Here's his chance for revenge. Joseph mistakenly gets apart and says, what story am I going to tell? Maybe God brought to his mind his dad and what it would do to his dad to lose all his kids. Maybe God brings his sons to mind and saying, Joseph, they're watching you. They know paganism and hedonism, and you're their only shot at knowing me, Joseph. What's he gonna do? Man, he's got all this anger. You can see it. He keeps toying with them like a cat and mouse. And you can just see the wrestling match. What is he gonna do? But Joseph had a pretty great story. And with his anger, with the hidden things, with the things nobody knew about, he said, what story am I going to tell? And he releases his anger to God. He forgives his brothers. He reveals who he is. And in that moment, God speaks to him and gives him clear understanding of why all this took place. Because he would save millions of lives by asking the right question and obeying God. Millions of people were saved because of him. He's very much a picture of Jesus Christ, which brings me to our close today. We get that people understand, but does God understand? Does God really know? We look at the story of humanity, and it seems like there's a lot of blood, there's a lot of guts, there's a lot of awful tragedy and trauma and drama. Does God really know? What story is he wanting to tell? If you go back in Genesis, to Genesis 3:15, man has just screwed it all up for all of us for all time. He has chosen to disobey God. And in Genesis 3:15, within moments of that taking place, God has a decision to make. Do I destroy humanity and start again? Do I not worry about it? Do I strip away free choice and free will and make everybody robots, and then everybody born after them has to love me and has to do right and has no choice, and they I make them love me. Well, that's fun, isn't it? When somebody, you feel like they just love you because they have to. But in that moment, God looked at the enemy and he looked at man. He looked at Satan and he looked at man. He said, listen, I want my story to be grace. And so here's what's going to happen, enemy of mankind, enemy of the soul, enemy of God himself. I'm going to let you play and I'm going to let you nip at my heels, but there's going to come a day where I'm going to step into the story and I'm going to change everything, and I'm going to die and I'm going to rise again, because the story that will be written for every person, and the Bible says in Hebrews 12:2 that he did it because he wanted to, not because he had to, and he took it a step further. He said, I did it for joy. It made me happy to finish the story with grace. And that is exactly what God did. And the reason you can pause today and the story can be different is because Jesus died and rose again. And he just stands at your heart's door and he says, if you'll let me in, we'll finish this story together with grace. If you're a Jesus follower and maybe you're sideways, you're facing that decision and you're questioning him, why this hurt, why this pain, why this pressure cooker, why this timetable that's impossible, and all you see is the future and just like it just seems misery ahead. And God says, listen, we can tell a different story, and I know it doesn't make sense right now, but if you'll let me, we can tell a story of grace. We can tell a story of life. And it's not only going to save you, it's going to save other people. It's going to impact their lives. It's going to be a difference in their life. And if that isn't enough, I want you to know that I'm going to tuck away, God says, because it is the glory of God to conceal a thing, and it is the glory of kings to search out a matter. Even if it takes me to where face to face, I'm going to tuck the big picture and the reasons that you may never know in this box in my heart. And when we're face to face, you and I are going to know the whole story, Jesus says, you and me. The reason for that loss. The reason he used that divorce. The reason he asked you to let him use the loss or the gain or the win. The reason that success was so much more difficult for you than losing. And you never could quite get all the answers. And you just kept saying, God, I want my story to be faith. I want my story to be life. I want my story to be you. And God says, listen, man, let's just sit down together. And let me show you how this grace thing works. But the choice begins with you today. How will the story go from here? What will be the end? We know the beginning. We know the mess ups. We know the patterns. We get it. We've all been there. But what story from today forward do you want to tell? Let's pray together. Father, thanks for today.